Okay, in your possession, I just handed out a little tiny little card that means absolutely nothing. Doesn't mean a damn thing. If the world ended right now, that would be the grade I report for this class. But the world's not ending. You still have another test. You've got a whole bunch of take-home quizzes. You have a final exam that's worth 25% of your grade still to come. There's lots of room for improvement, or if you start slacking off, lots of room to screw up. Don't start slacking off yet. We're not done. Today we're going to be working on Chapter 12, which is a chapter on solutions. A solution is a homogeneous mixture. Let me find my carefully planned example. What is it? My soda, my caffeine for the morning. What's in there? All kinds of stuff. Mostly water. There's some coloring, some caffeine, some flavors, a whole bunch of sugar, some preservatives, and whatever else happened to fall in the factory while no one else was looking. There's legal limits for things like that. A solution is a homogeneous mixture, a completely uniform mixture. We're primarily going to be talking about a solid mixed in a liquid, just because it's convenient, although it doesn't have to be. Could you mix two liquids together? Let's say vinegar and water. Sure. No problem. Could you mix two gases together? Sure. No problem. You're breathing them in right and out right now. The air you're breathing is a homogeneous mixture. It could be termed a solution. There's a whole bunch of nitrogen, some oxygen, a little tiny bit of carbon dioxide, some of the noble gases, not all of them, a couple of them. It is a uniform mixture. It is a solution. With solutions, we're going to have some vocabulary words for you. I know you love vocabulary. Solute. This is the smaller portion. This is what is being dissolved. Solvent. This is the larger portion. This is what is doing the dissolving. So if I back up a slide here to my sugar and water. The sugar, the smaller piece would be the solute. The water, the larger portion would be the solvent. So we're going to be dealing with things being put into other things. The larger piece is the solvent. Later on, we're going to get into some calculations because I know you miss math. It's been like two chapters. Most of our math is based on the solute, the smaller portion. The solvent is just a container. It's a place for us to put that solute. Now I'm going to rattle my bubbles out. Okay. We can make solid solutions. We can make a solid homogeneous mixture. For example, copper and silver. We can make them into sterling silver if we do one very important little step, and that is allow our molecules to move. Can they really move as a solid? No. So in order to change copper and silver into sterling silver, I have to melt them, change them into a liquid, let them move around, completely mix, and then let them solidify again, let them freeze, turn back to a solid, and they will freeze in that uniform mixture. So it is possible to make a solid solution, but you have to first somehow put it through a liquid or a gaseous state to let those molecules mix. Remember, it's got to be a homogeneous mixture, completely uniform. Okay. There's three main steps that we need to deal with in making a solution, making a homogeneous mixture. Since we're going to be talking mostly about water, water's really cheap, it's easy to find, it's everywhere. In water we have these little hydrogen bonds. These were intermolecular forces, forces in between molecules. Are they as strong as the single bond between the hydrogen and the oxygen? No. But it is a small interaction. In order to make a solution, we have to be able to break apart and move apart our water molecules. We have to make a space in my water for me to put that solute. It needs a place to go. Backing up a little bit. In our salt crystals, let's say we're trying to dissolve salt in water, can be sugar, can be whatever, we have interactions between the individual parts of those molecules as well. When we put them into solution, everything's free-floating. Everything's moving around, can go wherever it pleases, so we have to break these interactions as well. We have to loosen them out, we have to pull them apart, we have to give them the ability to move. Homogeneous mixture, completely uniform mixture, our molecules need to be able to move. So, to break apart my solute, I need energy. I have to put energy in. If I was to just try to melt my salt, remember from last week, salt melts at 800 degrees? That's a lot of energy. I can take salt and throw it in a glass of water and it'll dissolve all on its own. It'll separate without that 800 degree temperature. Why? Well, we need energy to break these apart. We need energy to break apart my water molecules. But when I put them together, they form little tiny interactions with each other. So my solute and my solvent form little tiny interactions, little tiny bonds. Every time you make a bond, you release a tiny little bit of energy. Remember, forming a bond gives us energy. Breaking a bond requires energy. However, in the water, we have lots of room to make a whole lot of these little tiny interactions. This is called a solvent cage. Our solute, when it's pulled apart, gets surrounded by the solvent molecules, forming these little tiny interactions. Each little tiny interaction, each tiny little thing is like a bond. It gives us a little bit of energy. So I get a little bit of energy, a little bit of energy, a little bit of energy. They add up really, really quickly. So for a solution to occur spontaneously, the energy required to pull apart my solute, the energy required to pull apart my solvent, needs to be equal to, or I need to get more energy back once I mix them. So when they're mixed, they're completely uniform. There's no difference from one side of the solution to the other. Our total energy, which we call the energy of solvation, needs to be greater once I put them together than what it takes to pull each individual piece apart. Your book spends like pages and pages and pages dwelling on this. Real simple. You got your solute. You need to pull it apart. That takes energy. You got your solvent. You need to pull that apart. That takes energy. When you put the solvent and solute together, you have new interactions. If those new interactions are greater or have more energy than what you started with, it will happen all on its own, without any help from you. Let me ask you some questions now. If you're trying to dissolve, let's say, sugar in water, salt in water, whatever, what happens when you heat it up? Is it easier to dissolve it or harder?
Easier.
Why? Because you're heating it up, they're moving around faster, you are putting energy in. Where's that energy going? Break these apart. Break these apart. It'll happen on its own, but if you give it more energy, it'll happen faster. What about stirring it? What are you doing when you're stirring, let's say, your tea or your coffee? You're adding energy. Where's that energy going? To break these apart. To break apart your sugar and your coffee and make room to put the sugar into the coffee. So when you're putting energy in, you're just making this occur more quickly. Questions? This is usually called solvation, the process of putting them together. Although since we're going to be talking about water a lot, it's also called hydration. Stick it in a bunch of water. Two terms that I very rarely use. They're in your book. May or may not be on your test, probably not. Okay. One more big piece of the puzzle here is entropy. Entropy is, for best intents and purposes, randomness. The universe, just like your kids' bedrooms, does not like to be in one kind of order, any kind of order. The universe is generally leading towards chaos. It's trying to make everything as random as possible. So when we put our very highly ordered crystals, sugar, salt, whatever, into our water, those individual pieces get to break apart, and they get to move around wherever they want. A very disordered system. In other words, my chlorines, my lithiums in this case, they don't have to be anywhere near each other. They're free to float around in the swimming pool. They're somewhere in your kid's bedroom. Who the heck knows where? Unless you have a very neat kid, in which case, I'm sorry. Questions on entropy? We're looking at our disorder, our randomness. It's a definition. Entropy is a measure of randomness, disorder. The more we can move around, the more likely we are in a disordered state. Why? Because we can. In a crystal, in a solid, well, we're in a very low entropy system, we're in a very highly ordered arrangement, and we're stuck there. It's not something we generally like. You probably wouldn't like it if I taped you to your chairs and left you there. Probably. You never know. Temperature. In general, when we are putting a solid into a liquid, increasing the temperature makes it easier for us to dissolve more of the solid. Backing up to this step. Why would it make it easier for me to take a solid and put it into a liquid if the temperature is higher? More energy. We need energy to break those solids apart. The higher the temperature, the more energy we have, the easier it is for us to do. Now, I say in general, because every once in a while we get a weird little thing like this cesium compound, that it actually decreases as the temperature goes up. But mostly, as you increase the temperature, the amount of solid that you can put into a liquid goes up. So let's say we're looking at our sugar line, glucose. At 20 degrees, I can put in a little over 80 grams of sugar into my water. If I increase my temperature from 20 to 40, we're already off the start, off the scale. We're past 140 grams. So increasing the temperature a little bit changes how much of a solid we can put into that liquid. What about a gas into a liquid? A gas into a liquid. What about my soda? There's carbon dioxide gas dissolved into this liquid. What happens if I increase the temperature? Does it stay in the liquid? No, it tries to get out. Why is that? Well, it's not the slide I wanted either. We'll get to this one. In a gas, are our molecules stuck together? No. They're already free and moving around. The higher the temperature, the faster they're moving. So if I want to trap them into the liquid, it's easier to do when they're moving slower than when they're moving faster. So if you're trying to catch your kids to put them to bed, if they're moving around kind of slow and they're already tired, it's easier to grab a hold of them. What if they're all hopped up on sugar? And they're bouncing off the walls? Then you got to do a lot more work to force it into where you want it to go. So gases, as you increase the temperature, the solubility decreases. It's harder to put it into the solution. It wants to be somewhere else. It wants to be moving around. It doesn't want to be trapped in a liquid. It wants to go everywhere else. With gases, we have one more property that we can deal with, and that is pressure. Pressure, for all intents and purposes, is how hard am I squeezing on those molecules. I can't really do this with a solid or a liquid because those molecules are already right next to each other. There's no more room for them to get squeezed any further. In a gas, however, our molecules are far apart. I can squeeze them. I can bring them closer together. That's our pressure. So as I increase the pressure, I squeeze down on the gas. It doesn't have a choice but to go into the liquid because there it's got more room. It's got more space to move around. What happens when I open this top? Releases the pressure, the pressure decreases. Does the gas have to stay in the liquid anymore? No, it's got other places it can go. So the increase in pressure, the easier it is to put the gas into the liquid. Best example ever. So much stuff I can talk about with it. So, solid, putting my sugar into my soda. The warmer the temperature, the easier it is for me to put that sugar into the liquid, the solid into a liquid. With the gas, the colder the temperature, the easier it is for me to trap that gas into the liquid. And the more pressure that I put on it, the easier it is for me to put that gas into the liquid. Okay, I'm going to back up a slide, I believe, to this one. At a given temperature, there is a maximum that I can put into my liquid of our solute, our smaller portion, what we're trying to dissolve. That maximum is our saturation point. Saturated means that we have put as much of our solute into our liquid, into our solvent, as we can at a given temperature. If it's a solid, if I increase the temperature, I can usually put more in there. If it's a gas, it's the other way around. So saturated is the most solute I can put into that solvent at a particular temperature. Supersaturated. Obviously, it means more than saturated. We are artificially forcing more solute into our solution than should be there. And we usually do that by manipulating our temperatures. Has anyone in here ever made candy? You take a pot of boiling water, just a pot of regular water, throw in some sugar. Eventually you get sugar sitting at the bottom. You take that pot and you heat it up, make it really hot. You add more and more and more and more and more and more and more sugar. Eventually you get almost a syrup. At that temperature, that high temperature, that solution is saturated. If you very carefully let it cool, it will stay in solution. That is supersaturated. There is more solute than should be there in that liquid. However, if there's any kind of impurity in there, a piece of dust, a string, those crystals, that extra stuff, will crystallize out. You'll get rock candy. So we are purposely dissolving more solute by increasing the temperature, saturating it at higher temperature, and then we're cooling it back down carefully. If everything stays in the liquid, it is supersaturated. Put a piece of string in there, those crystals, all that extra stuff above the saturation point will crystallize back out. No. Gases are going to try to leave the container. To supersaturate a gas, you put it under higher pressure. Okay. We have this kind of rule of thumb. It's a generic type of thing. Called like dissolves like. It is referring to our solute and our solvent. If they are similar in nature, they will dissolve in one another. If they are different, they probably won't. And specifically what we're talking about here is charges, polar and nonpolar. Things that have charges, things that are polar, tend to dissolve in other things that have charges, are also polar. Things that are nonpolar really don't want to dissolve in things that do have a charge, that are polar. So for example, salt and water. Salt has charges, positives and negatives, and our water molecules, well, they don't have actual charges, but they have partial charges, small positives and negatives, so those are similar. Salt will very easily dissolve in water. How about oil in water? Oils are nonpolar. They have no direction to their electrons. Water is still going to be polar, slightly positive, slightly negative. What happens when you put oil in water? They separate. One floats on top of the other. So these are different. They don't dissolve. They don't mix. They just sit one on top of the other. These are similar. They will dissolve. So you're working on your car, you get all greasy. That grease does not want to dissolve in water. How do you get clean?
Soap.
Soap or detergent is something that makes it easier for it to dissolve things that are different. A soap molecule has a portion that is a hydrocarbon, it's an oil or a fat, that is nonpolar. It also has an end on it that is very polar. The polar end is hydrophilic, loves water. The nonpolar end is hydrophobic, afraid of water, doesn't like it. When we put in our soap molecules and we scrub our hands, we get something called a micelle forming. A micelle is a group of our soap molecules surrounding our dirt, our oil, whatever we're trying to get rid of. Inside the micelle, there is no water. Inside the micelle are all these nonpolar tails for our soap molecule. On the outside, all the polar heads, all the stuff that really likes the water, and this whole big giant bubble floats away in the water and goes down our drain and gets treated at the treatment plant. So a micelle is an arrangement of soap molecules around a dirt, something else, oil, to let us dissolve nonpolar oils, fats, greases in polar water so that we can get clean.
Would you say that one more
time? Sure. Maybe. Totally forgot what I said already. A soap molecule arranges itself around a dirt particle in such a fashion that the polar tails surround our nonpolar solute, leaving the polar ends to interact with the water so that we can force a nonpolar solute to dissolve in a polar solvent such as water. Wasn't what I said the first time, but that's okay.
The nonpolar part of that micelle is bonding with the nonpolar part of the oil and
correct.
Water. And the nonpolars are leaving and the polars are staying.
They are all leaving all together. So.
But like they're all grouped.
It's all grouped together. Think of this as a big bubble. Inside the bubble is the nonpolar oil, all of our nonpolar tails. The stuff that does not like the water. On the outer edge of the bubble are all the polar heads. This is the stuff that likes water. And this whole big giant bubble floats off and goes down our drain. So it's all one big container for your oil. How about that? Yeah, you can't expect me to remember what I said 2 seconds ago. Where's my eraser? Okay. Saturated and supersaturated. Obviously, there has to be some kind of numbers associated with these things. Of course. This is going to be concentration. A concentration is a numerical value for quantities. How much stuff did we put in there? Now, we have some generic terms that are just kind of applied that don't tell us numbers. Dilute and concentrated. So, let me give you some examples of these generic terms. I take, go upstairs to the faculty offices, get some coffee. I can see through this coffee. Is that very strong coffee, weak coffee? Weak. That would be dilute. There is very little solute compared to our solvent. Somebody's getting cheap on the coffee on me. As opposed to concentrated, which means that we have a lot of solute compared to solvent. The way my uncle makes coffee, which it isn't coffee until the spoon stands upright in it. Very, very strong coffee. A lot of solute compared to our solvent. But neither of these have a number associated with them. Did I put in a teaspoon of coffee? 2 teaspoons? How much? So we need to have some numbers. This is our molarity. Kind of remember that, recognize the first part of the word here? Mole. This is the moles of solute compared to the liters of solution. That's our definition for molarity. How many moles of my solute do I put in there compared to the volume of the solution, specifically in liters? Now, we need to be careful with the word solution. The solution is everything that you put into your container. All of your solute, all of your solvent, everything that's in there, all together. We are not talking about the solvent on its own in any way, shape, or form. The solute compared to everything.
So is it somewhat like mass over?
It's similar to the mass percent, where it was the mass of the piece divided by the mass of everything. Similar concept, just different units. Right now we have moles of our solute, that's our piece, divided by liters of our solution, that's everything. All Okay. Making solutions. Solutions, there's the easy way to do it, and then there's the really, really, really hard way to do it. The easy way to do it, we weigh out our solids. We need to know how many moles. Do you know how to get from grams to moles? Kind of still remember your molarity, or not your molarity, your molar mass from the periodic table. You weigh out your solid. That solid does occupy a space. It does take up room. To make a solution, because we're talking about the whole thing, everything, that means your solid and your liquid, what we'll do is we'll use something called a volumetric flask. It is a container which has an exact marking for a specific amount of liquid altogether. You start with your solid, you throw it in there, you throw in a whole bunch of water on top. Do we really care how much water we put in? No. We want enough to get to a particular point to make a certain volume of our solution. The actual physical quantity of water really doesn't matter. Just need to get there. That's the easy way. Buy a really expensive piece of glassware, throw some stuff together, it's already marked for you. The really difficult way, which we are totally not going to talk about in this class except for 2 seconds here, find out the density of your solid, which is not always easy because they're usually crystals, which means they have little spaces in between them, which you got to account for. Figure out and calculate how much water you need to add, also not an easy task, and then put them together. Way easier to just put them together into a fixed volume container where you don't have to actually calculate how much liquid you need to put in. So, let me give you some examples. Because it's been a little over a week since you had to do math. I need to make a saline solution. That is 3.0. A saline solution is the fancy term for salt water. So the really expensive saline solution that you get for dipping your contacts in, it's salt water. Let's say that I make my solution from 3 moles of salt, and I make a total volume of 6 liters of total solution. I want to know what the molarity is, what the concentration is. What was our definition for molarity? Moles of solute divided by liters of solution. So 3 moles of salt divided by 6 liters of solution. And we get a 0.5 molar salt solution. You've seen this marking before. I know you have. Every bottle up in the lab is stamped with it. All of our bottles have a concentration on them. That big giant capital M means molarity. And it's usually put into italics, but since I'm writing with handwriting on the board, it doesn't look any different. The big giant M means molarity. Moles of solute per liter of solution. Molarity is the concentration. Or a way to calculate a concentration. Now, I'm not going to be just asking you to calculate molarity. I'm going to be cruel and sadistic and make you calculate all kinds of things. That would be 0.5 molar sodium hydroxide or sodium chloride, or 0.5 moles sodium chloride per liter of solution. If I had 4 liters of 0.1 moles per liter of sugar solution, sugar and water, how many moles of sugar did I put in there? Well, you got a formula. Molarity is moles of solute per liter of solution. I'd like you to get in the habit that every time you see this big giant capital M, get rid of it. Write in what it actually means. It actually means 0.1 moles of sugar for every time I have 1 liter of solution. It'll make it a whole lot easier for you to figure out what you need. I have 4 liters of solution. Do I want to multiply by that or divide by it? In other words, do I want the liters on top or on the bottom? I want them on the bottom. What happens to the liters? They cancel out. What's left? Moles. What did I ask you for? Moles. And since I know that you all hate units, I can give you some formulas. Yes. That's our formula up there. Moles divided by liters is our molarity. Liters times our molarity will get you back to moles. And moles divided by molarity will get you to liters. You're confused by the problem up there. Sugar solution.
What is
sugar water.
0.1
means that it's 0.1 moles of sugar for every time I have 1 liter of solution. That is the concentration, that is the molarity. In 4 liters, how many moles of sugar would I have?
Every 72 molarity is compared to 1 liter.
Correct. Sadistic man is giving you grams instead of moles. That's okay, because you've dealt with that before. I'm looking for the molarity of 2.5 liters of solution, that's everything, if I put in 100 grams of salt to begin with. So, molarity is moles of solute per liter of solution. I've given you the liters of solution. Did I give you the moles? No. But by this point in time, I fully expect you to be able to calculate them. So if I have 100 grams of salt, How do we change from grams of salt to moles of salt? Add up your molar mass. One chlorine, one sodium. 5844. Mass divided by your molar mass gives you your moles. Now, is that our answer? No. Almost. I now have my moles. I've given you the liters. Put them together. Moles divided by liters gives us our molarity. So this would be 0.684 molar sodium chloride, which really means 0.684 moles of sodium chloride for every time I have 1 liter of solution. So this big giant capital M means molarity. The number here is with the moles. It's always per 1 liter. That's not so bad, is it? How big is a liter? 1,000 milliliters, so like two of my sodas. It's a pretty big volume compared to the little drops that you use in the lab. Usually, we're going to do things in milliliters. Say that I took 25 grams of calcium bromide and I used it to make 100 milliliters of solution. I want the molarity. What was the definition for molarity? Moles of solute per liter of solution. Do we have moles?
No.
Do we have liters?
No.
So we're going to have to deal with both of those. Which one do you want to deal with first? Grams to moles, so 25.0 grams, CaBr2. How are we changing that to moles? Divide by the molar mass. How do we figure out the molar mass? Two bromines, one calcium, add together their masses. One, 99.88. Yep. Yes, no, maybe. Mm-hmm. Close enough. Okay, so we've got the moles done. That's the top of our problem. How about the milliliters? How many milliliters are there in a liter? There's 1,000 milliliters in a liter. Milliliters cancels out. And we get 0.1 liters. Moles divided by our liters gets us our molarity. 0.125. If I could write a 5. Divided by 0.10. So we have 1.25 molar calcium bromide, which really means 1.25 moles of calcium bromide for every time I have 1 liter of solution. Questions? Do we need more?
Probably.
All right. I came prepared. I gave you 150 milliliters of 0.87 molar sugar water, and we're going to give our sugar a formula C6H12O6, and I asked you to find out how many grams of sugar are in that solution. Could you figure it out? Sure, why not? So, first off, what does that big giant capital M mean? It is the molarity, which is moles of sugar for 1 liter of solution. I didn't give you 1 liter though. I gave you 150 milliliters. So you have one of two options. Option one, convert it to liters separately. Option two, mush the two of them together and change the liters on the bottom to milliliters right away. Either way will work. 1 liter is 1,000 milliliters, so if I change this to 1,000 milliliters, is there anything wrong with that? No. Whichever way works better for you. Either do it as a whole separate step, or put the two of them together. Milliliters cancels out, and we have moles of sugar. But I didn't want moles of sugar. I wanted grams. How do we get grams of sugar from moles of sugar? Periodic table, 6 carbons, 12 hydrogens, 6 oxygens. Multiply across the top, multiply across the bottom, do your division last. Milliliters canceled out, moles canceled out, and we're left with grams.
You have 180, but
the
molar mass
would be... Correct. 6 carbons, 12 hydrogens, 6 oxygens. Which, if I did my math correctly and I could figure out where I wrote it, means that I started off with 23.5 grams of sugar to make this solution. We're just going backwards from the calculation we did 2 minutes ago. Which one am I going to ask you? All of the above. I can ask you any way I want. That's the fun enjoying of being a crazy man in front. Okay, one more, then we'll move on to the other stuff. I want to make 375 milliliters of 0.274 molar iron 3 chloride solution. How many grams of the iron 3 chloride do I need to start with? Similar question to what we just did, I just phrased it differently. What do I want from you? Grams of iron 3 chloride. All right, what's the big giant capital M mean?
Molarity,
which means moles of iron 3 chloride per liter of solution. And I didn't give you a liter, I said I only wanted 375 milliliters. All right, first we need to get rid of those liters, get our moles free. So to get our moles, we're using our formula on the side there. I want moles, I need to multiply these two together. Your volume times your molarity. But you got an issue. What's your issue? Milliliters instead of liters. Which one do you want to change? Change this one to 1,000 milliliters? So 375 milliliters. Milliliters cancels away, we're left with moles of iron 3 chloride. And now this is one of those points where the crazy man in front is trying to make you review. What the heck is an iron 3 chloride? How are we going to find out its molar mass? We need some subscripts. Iron is a transition metal. We don't normally know what charge it carries. Which one does this have? How do you know? Roman numeral. This iron got rid of 3 electrons, which means my chlorines. How many of them can I attach? 3. So when I'm finding my molar mass, 1 mole of iron 3 chloride, we need to add together 1 iron and 3 chlorine atoms. I love it when I get to throw review in where you don't want it. Does anyone have a number for me? Do I have a number for me? 162.2. Milliliters cancels out. Moles cancels out. And we're left with grams, which is what I wanted from you. So in order to make 375 milliliters of 0.274 moles per liter iron 3 chloride, I need to start with 16.7 grams of that iron 3 chloride, of our solute. All right. This is not the only way that I can make a solution. I don't have to start with a solid. I could start with a more concentrated version and dilute it, add more water to it. Dilution just means we're taking a solution that we've already made and we're adding more of our solvent. Somewhere I have a picture. Not the one I want. That's the one I want. We start off with a concentrated solution. A lot of solute, compared to our solvent. And then we add more solvent, the solute stays the same. Now I have a special formula for you. It makes life really, really easy for the dilution problems. I just gotta put a big giant disclaimer on it. This formula is only for dilution problems. You're gonna wanna use it everywhere. This is the only place it works. Molarity 1 times the volume 1 is equal to M2 V2. What this means is that if I start off with my volume at a particular concentration and I change my volume, my molarity will adjust itself so that they equal out again. Let me give you an example. We usually buy our hydrochloric acid upstairs somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 molar, 2 mole per liter. In other words, if you stuck your finger in there, some of your finger would come back. This is not what we want to give you, for obvious reasons. For you, we usually give you a solution somewhere in the neighborhood of 0.3 molar. And let's say that I needed to make 150 milliliters of this 0.3 molar hydrochloric acid solution. I buy my concentrated version, that way I don't have to pay for shipping the water. I add more water when it gets here. How much? How much of this concentrated do I need to get to make 150 milliliters of 0.3 molar hydrochloric acid dilute solution for you? How do you know it's a dilution? It is a dilution because you are using the same exact compound. The only thing changing is your molarity and your volume. If you change compounds, try to do some kind of stoichiometry, you cannot use this formula. Your compounds have to stay the same. All we're adding is more solvent. So, it doesn't matter what side you put things on, as long as you put them together. So this is 150 milliliters of 0.3 molar. Those two stay together. Do you care which side you put them on? Pick a side. Put them on the left. Too late. So we have 0.3 molar times our volume. This is equal to our concentrated version, which is 2.0 molar, and I'm looking for this volume. How much of it do I need? Over there we had to do that whole changing from milliliters to liters. You don't have to worry about it with this formula. That's why it's so nice and simple. Just put them together. Dilute, concentrated, doesn't matter which side you put them on, just put them together. How am I going to get this V all by itself? Divide. 2.0 molar, divide by 2.0 molar. What happens to these molarities? They cancel out. So this and this disappear. What unit is left? Is that a unit of volume? Sure. So our volume, for this example, will end up in milliliters. How many? If I did my math right and I'm reading the right example. So I need to start off with 22.5 milliliters of my 2 molar hydrochloric acid. And then I need to add more of our solvent, in our case water, until I reach my new volume of 150 milliliters. Nope. It'll give you whatever unit you start with for volume, it'll end up with for volume.
And it's 22.5 milliliters
of the 0.2 or 2 molar solution. Let me ask you this in a reverse fashion. I told you that I started off with 12.8 milliliters of 3.61 molar sodium chloride solution, and I diluted it to 250 milliliters. What changed? Did the moles of solute change?
No.
No. The amount of solvent changed. So we are diluting. So we're going to use our formula. What goes together? 12.8 milliliters of 3.61. I lost the molar. Those go together. On the other side, 250 milliliters. And what are we looking for? Molarity. What side do you want to put things on? Right or left? Does it matter? No. Well, 0.8 milliliters, 3.61 molar, is equal to our other concentration, which is what we're looking for, times our volume, which is 250 milliliters. How are we going to get that molarity all by itself? Divide by the 250. Those cancel out. What happens to your milliliters? They cancel out. What unit is left? Molarity, moles per liter. So we'll do our math. 0.185 molar. Sodium chloride solution. Dilutions are really easy because I've given you a formula. And as long as you remember the formula and use it here, that's fine. That's usually not where my problem lies. Usually my problem lies in that you want to use this formula for everything. This is the only place that this formula will work, is if we are changing the volume of our solute. We're adding more. We're making it more concentrated or less concentrated. That would be if we're boiling water away, which we could do too. So we're changing the concentration. Our compounds are exactly the same. That doesn't mean we will not change compounds, because we will. On, today's Tuesday? So on Thursday, we're going to start talking about solution stoichiometry. Do you remember that word? We're going to do it all over again. Remember your four steps for stoichiometry?
No.
Balanced equation. Convert to moles. Mole-to-mole comparison. converts whatever units I ask you for.
There you go.
Those four steps have not changed. Same four steps, even though we're in a different chapter. If you came in late, come up and see me.
And the quiz is due on Thursday.